Next case for argument, Pastor v. Ford Motor. Mr. Rosenthal.
May it please the Court, my name is Richard Rosenthal. I represent the appellants who were the plaintiffs below. I'm going to try to assiduously follow Judge Posner, your directive that we not re-argue the things that were just presented in the previous appeal, but I have to concede that there is a lot of overlap, so I'm going to do my very best to navigate through that. The district court's core error here was that it conducted the forum nonconvenience balancing test without first affording the proper deference to this plaintiff's choice of forum.
Why should there be so much deference? You talk about the thumb on the scale.
Yes.
The plaintiff gets to decide who to sue, when to sue, what to sue for, and where to sue, and I can see some slight deference that would be appropriate there. But what's this with this heavy thumb on the scale that you argue
be employed here? I'm sorry. Let me address that in two respects, because I think it also touches on the question that Judge Posner asked in the previous argument about the South Carolina plaintiff suing in Charleston. There is a correlative limit on the plaintiff's choice of form, and those are things like subject matter jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, venue, and this Court has talked about those in the USO opinion. Now, as I see it, I think that this Court's opinions lay out sort of three categories of plaintiffs, degrees of deference. Now, the Second Circuit, we know, applies sort of a sliding scale, and I'm not suggesting that these categories are rigid either. There is some fluidity. But this Court has said that you get the strongest deference for a plaintiff suing an American plaintiff suing at home, a Category 1, I'll call them. The reason for that is our historical deference to a plaintiff's forum choice, so long as there's legitimate, what I'll call legitimate forum shopping, and that's sort of what the Irigori Court talked about in New York, as opposed to illegitimate. And I welcome the opportunity to talk about that in one second. But I think where we are is we are a Category 2 plaintiff, which is essentially the equivalent of an American defendant living overseas who sues back in the U.S. forum. Now, Judge Barker treated us as if we're a Category 3 plaintiff, which is to say very little deference because you're a foreign plaintiff. But the treaty, which hasn't been disputed, should have put us in Category 2, what I've described as Category 2.
Everything about how this accident occurred, very tragic accident, but all the facts about the accident take place in Argentina. I don't understand the product liability issues here, mm-hmm. but the facts of the accident, what witnesses saw, what the driving conditions were like, everything like that is all Argentina.
I don't dispute that, but we don't even know if there are witnesses. That was their burden. The defendants, if they had somebody come forward and say, look, five people saw this or there were witnesses, they should have identified those. Now, what's important and the district court overlooked
is
that
they list 26 witnesses, Argentinian witnesses.
Yeah, and those are bullet-pointed categories saying if there are any witnesses, they ought to come, if there are any medical personnel. Now, incidentally, we got affidavits from the actual medical personnel and the people who wrote the police report who swore under oath that they would come to the United States and testify both to be deposed and at trial.
How could that be enforced?
How could that
oath, their promise that they would come?
I think it gets back. It's a good question. I think it gets back to Judge Posner's point earlier, which is the district court here in the United States could say, look, if these people aren't coming, I can impose sanctions on the parties or I can throw out the case. But nevertheless, that's a fact that Judge Barker never even acknowledged. You have these generalized statements, well, there might be witnesses in Argentina, there might be XYZ, these categories, whereas the actual people who have been identified have all sworn, not orally, in writing, with affidavits, saying that they will come to the United States, both to be deposed and for trial. So to try to return to the question of deference, why is there so much deference? I think if we were writing on a clean slate, we might say there ought not be that much. But the Supreme Court in Gulf Oil, and even as recently as Sinochem, has said there is deference. And this court
it's a question of how much deference is deference.
That's exactly right.
It's a 51-49 case. That's different than a 80-20 case.
That's right. And I think there should be substantial deference here. What Judge Barker said, this was her quote, quote, she was applying, quote, a neutral rule comparing the relative convenience of the parties, end quote. It is certainly not neutral. Whether it's 51-49 or 80-20, it is not neutral. She gave us really no benefit of the doubt. She paid lip service to the treaty initially, but then when she came to the conclusion and said how much...
Now, why is it you said your clients are in Category 2? You said Category 2 was Americans living abroad?
Yeah, yes. analogous to
Argentine people?
Yes, because this court's decisions have said that when there is a treaty, when these are treaty nationals and the treaty affords them the full and equal rights of U.S. individuals, they should be treated as if they're Americans. Now, but I have to acknowledge, these are not Americans who live in the United States.
What is this treaty you're talking about?
It's cited in the brief, Your Honor. It's the Treaty of Friendship, Commerce, et cetera, between the United States and Argentina.
Is this something special, or don't we have that with every country except Iran or something?
No. It is it is special in the sense that some treaties just say you'll have fair treatment, we'll afford you reasonable access. But this court has said there are a subspecies of treaties that say full and equal access to our courts of justice or to our avenues and enjoy all the rights and privileges that American citizens have. That's what this one says. It's a very particular treaty in that sense. And so that's why I say our plaintiffs are essentially what I call Category 2. Now, that doesn't eliminate the convenience discussion in terms of deference. Convenience is always the touchstone. Judge Posner, that's what you wrote for the court in the USO Holdings case. This is always about convenience. So let me talk about why the deference has to be strong here and why the quote-unquote forum shopping here was totally legitimate forum shopping, not some sort of vexatious or gotcha tactic. If you look, for example, and I think the best opinions on this, candidly, are not coming from this court. They're coming from the Second Circuit. But this court has said we ought to look to Irigori. And that was in the MDL2 case from 2003, the Second Circuit went en banc and said, look, the things you ought to look at are where are the availability of evidence and witnesses? Here we know we have a mountain of documents written in English, which would have to be translated to send it to Argentina. Are the defendants amenable to suit there? Sure. We also sued in Florida, which is where the last sort of clear shot was, where the actual testing of these defective products were before they were shipped out overseas and caused the injury. Now, the things that would be illegitimate forum shopping, we didn't do. Did we do something? Did we file in the particular venue that we did because the defendants are especially popular, or the plaintiffs are, especially popular there, or the defendant is especially unpopular in that forum? No.
Why did you sue in America rather than?
We sued in America because the overwhelming majority of evidence was here. Because you have hundreds of thousands of critical documents that are highly technical that Ford has assembled, and they're written in English. And also the car is now here. So, naturally, are there strategic advantages just being in the United States? Absolutely. I would be less than genuine if I were to tell you that we don't like the American justice system. But the fact is, the overwhelming majority of the evidence is here. And, Your Honor, Judge Posner, you touched on it in the earlier argument. You said, isn't it easier just to buy a few plane tickets to let them fly to Miami, which is where the case was filed, as opposed to translating highly technical documents? The only evidence in the record shows that that would be at the cost of literally millions of dollars. That would have gone unrefuted. And send all of it down to Argentina. We've also presented evidence, unrefuted, which is that if all the depositions that were taken, for them to be sent down to Argentina, those witnesses would have to reappear in Argentina to get the full evidentiary value of their statement.
You say that under Argentine law, American tort law would apply here?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You say that under Argentine law, American tort law would apply?
I think it probably would. I heard the colloquy in the earlier argument. First of all, I think the Florida choice of law rule says that U.S. law applies. I have to respectfully disagree with your statement because all the cases we've cited out of Florida say that, and of course under Claxon we apply Florida's choice of law rules, say that the place of the wrongdoing, not the place of the injury, is the law to be applied. So we think it's U.S. law. And would that apply if we were in Argentina? I don't know. It would depend on what Argentina's choice of law rule said. But it may very well be U.S. law.
That's important, isn't it?
That's important.
An Argentine court is going to do a better job in interpreting Argentine law than an American court.
I don't dispute that. But it was, they presented absolutely nothing to say what Argentina's choice of law rules. And we've said, look, if it's the same as ours, if it's the same as Florida's choice of law rule, then you have a false conflict. And this is much ado about nothing. We might all be applying the same law.
Why is Florida in here? I don't understand. How does Florida get in?
Florida is where the product was tested before it was shipped out. They designed the product, they manufactured the product, and then they tested it. And they tested it in Florida.
Yes, but if this suit were brought in, if this suit remained in Indiana, you'd use Indiana choice of law rules.
If it had originally been sent there or by the MDL, I'm not sure I understand the question. Because it was originally filed in Florida, and then it was MDL'd up to Judge Barker in Indianapolis.
So are you saying that if it's tried in the United States, it would be sent to Florida for trial?
Typically, in the MDL practices, obviously Judge Barker, I suppose, could do what she wants, right. But typically the transferor court will receive it for trial. They'll work it up and they'll do all the pretrial.
I
Yeah, so that's why Florida choice of law rules govern. And Florida, maybe it's unique, but Florida says it, they'll apply the law of the place of the wrongdoing, not the injury. And I'm into my white lights. So I'll sit down and listen.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Rosenthal. Ms. Alonso?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Alina Alonso. I am counsel for Ford Motor Company, and today I will be presenting argument on behalf of Ford and Bridgestone Firestone. The 32-page district court order below details each side's arguments on each interest factor, and as plaintiffs have conceded in the brief, the availability and adequacy of Argentina.
Well, now, will Florida tort law apply if the case is tried in Argentina?
If the case is tried in Argentina, Florida follows the significant relationship test. And under that test, Restatement 146 and 175.
Could you just answer my question? What if the trial is in Argentina? What body of substantive law applies?
If the trial is in Argentina?
Yes,
Your Honor.
That's where you want to be.
Be in Argentina. We have not fully set forth the choice of law issues in Argentina because what the court determined and what we argued was that for purposes of deciding this motion, Florida choice of law issues controlled, and Florida choice of law dictates that the place of injury, Florida is not different from the majority of the states. If you look at this court's opinion...
Well, answer my question, then. What body of law will apply if the case is tried in Argentina and in Florida? Which?
Argentine law. Because Argentina is the place of injury.
You think the Florida court will apply Argentine law?
I absolutely think the Florida court will apply Argentine law.
And the
basis for that is that Florida follows the general rule that the court alluded to in the prior argument that you apply the law of the place of injury. This court held that in the Barron decision, and the cases that plaintiffs cite where the court applies something other than the law of the injury are cases where the accident was in a fortuitous jurisdiction. And in this case, although...
In a what?
Fortuitous jurisdiction.
What is that?
It's generally used in airplane cases where the plane takes off in one jurisdiction going towards another and happens to fall in a fortuitous jurisdiction. This case is in no... The accident in this case was in no way fortuitous because it could not have happened in any place other than Argentina. This vehicle was never in a U.S. stream of commerce.
So you're saying Argentine law would apply anyway. Now, what about your opponent's point about all the evidence being in the United States and in English?
The law on the forum nonconvenience jurisprudence teaches that the issue on that is the access. And plaintiffs have access because the documents have been deposited in a document depository.
What about the translation?
The translation issue, the court, the MDL court originally, 2000, first of all, it's not millions of documents. It's about 2,000. And the courts that have looked at this issue, including the 11th Circuit in the recent Palicelli decision, concluded that they would never be introducing millions of documents. But when you look at the translation issue, what the district court below held was that, yes, certainly it would be no small task. But that in following the weight of authority and looking at all the other costs, because if what we're going to do is stack up documents, yeah, there are probably more documents that are design-related documents. But if the case is tried in Argentina, we have to have a parallel litigations in Argentina. I'm sorry, if the case is kept in the United States, we'd have parallel litigation. We need to go down there to conduct discovery, to depose witnesses, to figure out how to bring them back for trial. We need to figure out Argentine law, hire experts, and although not an issue because plaintiffs have conceded the availability and adequacy, the expert reports that were submitted below perfect evidence of the fact that it's difficult to ask for U.S. Parties to ascertain what Argentine law would be. Again, as the court is aptly aware, the standard of review is abuse of discretion, and the district court here found that, first of all, placed the proper burden on the defendants, found that Argentina was available and adequate, and that is unchallenged, provided them more presumption than she was actually required to under Piper and the jurisprudence from this circuit, and balanced the private and public interest factors to conclude that they clearly pointed towards a trial in Argentina. She set forth a number of conditions to ensure that the suit could be brought, and that if for some reason there was a problem with either production of evidence or availability, it could be reinstated. And this court importantly affirmed conditions that were either exactly the same or very close to it, and it is at tab A of our answer brief where we've compared her conclusions in the case we refer to as MDL 2 appeal. And in
I've got some trouble with the language Judge Barker used. Rather
yes,
than giving deference to the plaintiff's choice forum, she applied a neutral rule.
She referred to it as a neutral rule, which is actually a phrase that is in a prior Seventh Circuit decision in Leiva. But if you look at what she actually did, and I won't quote the actual language, but she says that when plaintiff is a non-resident treaty national from a country such as Argentina, which has ratified an international covenant entitling treaty nationals residing in their home countries to the same deference on choice of forum as resident U.S. nationals, then the private and public interest factors must do more than merely point. So if we're going to look at a scale, what you have actually is the strong presumption that you would give to a resident plaintiff, to a U.S. national who happens to reside in Florida, in this case where the transfer court is. And then you have what Piper and Camel and the other cases from this court say, which is a foreign plaintiff, you're going to give them less deference. There's really no quantifiable percentage on that. She took a middle-of-the-road approach, which she referred to as a nuanced approach in the MDL-1 case and in the MDL-2 case, and she cites it consistently and says, because there's a treaty, and again, her position is she was not required to do that, because there is a treaty, I'm going to treat you, resident Argentine, as I would a U.S. citizen who happens to be residing in Argentina, because at the end of the day, it's an issue of she focused on residence as opposed to on citizenship. And that is consistent with even the Second Circuit law in a case called Paulus, I believe. And we believe she reached a middle-of-the-road approach and that she properly balanced it. Although she referred to it as a neutral rule, it's clearly she's saying I'm somewhere in the middle, and that's evident from her prior opinions discussing it as a nuanced approach.
And it's essentially the same language she used in the Mexico case.
In the Mexico case and in the Venezuela and Colombia cases. She quotes them both in that argument. Again, these same conclusions were affirmed by this court in the Manez case, which is the case we refer to as the MDL-2 appeal case. And they were recently affirmed similar conclusions by the 11th Circuit in another group of cases involving Argentine plaintiffs, the case entitled called Palicelli versus Ford Motor Company. If there are no other questions, we would respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's opinion.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Alonzo. Mr. Rosenthal, how much time does he have? 5 minutes.
May it please the court.
So is it 2,000 documents that you want translated or 11 million?
Well, even at 2,000, we provided a conservative estimate, saying even if it were only a few thousand, and this is an unrefuted testimony below, you're looking at close to $4 to $5 million in translation costs. Now, of course, we're not going to use
Wait
all
a second. How long are these? How many pages are there in the 2,000 documents?
I don't know.
Well, how do you know it's $4 or $5 million?
That's what our expert said. Their calculations, I don't know as I stand here. I don't recall what the calculation was. But if you look, I think it's on page 29 of our district court briefing, where we lay out, no, I beg your pardon, page 22, 21 and 22 in the district court briefing.
Well, they'll have documents in Spanish that'll have to be translated, too.
They will, but very few. You're talking about an accident report, perhaps, from the witness, who, you know, the EMT.
Hospital reports and
no question. No question. And I'm not here to tell you that it's completely one-sided. There will be a few, but it's nothing on the order of what you have to translate. And the documents that we're going to have to translate, if it's sent to Argentina, are highly technical documents about things that I probably should have studied when I was thinking about being a lawyer, ball bearings and the structure of this car and its structural integrity. Those are difficult documents, and this is not me talking. These are the experts below. Undisputed that even at the low conservative estimate, even if it's only documents in the thousands, you're talking about $4 to $5 million in translation costs. Dwarfs anything, any sort of problem that you would have if we brought the case here. Let me just hit a couple of points because I know my time is short. On the choice of law question, you'll note that my sister at the bar doesn't really have a coherent answer on what Argentina's choice of law rules would do and what that would be. Well, that's their burden. Their burden, if they're as a proponent of a forum nonconvenience motion, is to explain why it would be so troublesome to have the case here in the United States forum. The only presentation that's been made is the Florida choice of law rule, and that, if you look at pages 39 and 40 of our brief, you'll see all the cases talking about applying the law of where the tort takes place.
No, I think she's right on that. I think she's right.
Respectfully, Your Honor, all I'd say is look at the trucking cases. They're not fortuitous flyover airline cases, as she described.
It's a fortuitous. The truck goes from one state to another, and where it happens to
be. Your Honor, a lot like a Ford Explorer, which is shipped overseas. People drive them wherever they go, and it flips over where it flips over. Fortuitous in the same rough sense. But I won't. Your Honor will decide what the case is, but I'd encourage the court to look at pages 39 and 40 of our initial brief and those cases from Florida, the only Florida cases cited. The final point that I want to talk about is this idea of deference, because it gets back to Judge Evans' question from earlier and Judge Tinder's question as to what Judge Barker meant when she said there was a neutral rule. Now, none of us are clairvoyant. We can't know what degree of deference she said. We can only know it by what she wrote. She wrote it was a neutral rule. Now, whether for some previous case in the MDL context, this may mirror language she used before. There may or may not have been treaty implications there. But here, if you look at the specific language, it's pretty clear that this is her conclusion. After going through all of the order, this is at page 19 of her order, she talks about the treaty, she talks about the presumption, and she concludes with thus, signifying this is her conclusion.
Let's see what difference that treaty makes.
Oh, it makes a big difference, Your Honor.
It make a difference because it seems to me any country, any foreigner, I would think, would have the same access to our courts as an Argentina.
What it does, Your Honor,
have our courts discriminating against foreigners? That's ridiculous.
Well, it's treaties. That's why
we've said that in other cases. No, we're not going to discriminate in favor of Americans against foreigners in federal courts.
And
that doesn't make any sense. Treaty or no treaty?
And I don't think we should, and that's why I think this case is exactly like the hypothetical you posited with the South Carolina plaintiff who happens to sue in Chicago. There would not be this immense hostility. Oh, my God, he brought suit in Chicago and not in Charleston, South Carolina. You'd say, well, why did he sue in Chicago? Maybe all the key documents are there, or a lot of the key documents are there. Maybe that's where a significant portion of the tort occurred, as what happened here in Florida.
But the deference, I don't get the deference point. It seems to me that, you know, You try to figure out where the trial will be least burdensome, and you have an argument that there's more translation need. On the other hand, if Argentine substantive law applies, that's a strong argument for having the trial in Argentina. Is there anything concrete here except the translation costs?
Sure. How about the most concrete item? The vehicle. It is here. It is in the United States of America.
But it came up. I'm sorry. It came up during the time this motion was pending.
It sure did. It was very expensive and laborious for us to get it here. Why have to undo all that work and send it back to Argentina? I mean, the case was here. There's nothing untoward about us bringing the piece of evidence in the case where we want to try.
Well, it can't be that expensive to send a car to Argentina.
It's presumably as expensive as it was to ship it up from here. Why double the cost?
Millions of cars, right? We import. I don't know.
Yeah,
we
I don't know.
Several million
I don't know
cars
if there's
a year. So there's not the transportation cost. Is
I don't know if it has to do with chain of custody that we want to keep it in the same condition, and it's. I don't know. But whatever that cost is, it's already been incurred. Why double?
So it's the shipping cost plus the translation cost. Is there anything else?
Well, yes. The evidentiary rules of Argentina, which would require the depositions that have already been taken, would require all those American witnesses to fly down to Argentina to ratify their testimony for them to have full evidentiary effect. So you've got witnesses having to go to Argentina, the car that has to go to Argentina, the translation cost, which could be in the millions of dollars.
Well, suppose her order were conditioned on Ford picking up a share of these expenses. Would that Would that make it okay?
No, because this, because the question is convenience and burden. It's not who's got the deep pocket.
It's a question of money. And if Ford picked up, you know, half the or two-thirds of the translation cost and the shipping cost and transportation cost for witnesses, wouldn't that take care of it?
Your Honor, what you're essentially advocating is that a wealthy defendant can buy its way out of an American jurisdiction, saying, here, we'll pay for all the costs for us to go to some far-flung locale. What's wrong with it is the whole notion of the American justice system being there for plaintiffs to choose.
Why are Argentine people so reluctant to be in this, gruesome accent, so reluctant to be suing the gringos in Argentina, right?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't exactly refer to them as gringos.
They're
quite influential in Argentina.
Concerns. I understand your cost concerns, but I don't understand why, if those concerns were taken care of, you wouldn't want to be in Argentina.
Well, I think I talked about those in my initial...
Don't Argentine courts protect their own citizens against foreign tort fees?
Well, I'm not going to stand up here and bash the Argentine legal system. I'm sure they're wonderful. But that's not the point.
I doubt they're wonderful.
Well, okay. But the answer to your...
This is a very close case. All these foreign non-convenience cases are close. This is the factor case. Maybe the rule ought to be if it's not a clear winner for either side, you have a coin toss.
No. 50-50 wouldn't be bad, but
they do that in the NFL in overtime.
But I will tell
you, win most of the time if they.
I take your point, Your Honor, but I think that just underscores how important it is to get right at the outset how much deference is to be applied. Because if you're doing this balancing and it's very close, it's really important to know how much weight you're putting, whether you're putting a thumb on the scale at the outset or a pinky or nothing at all. And the Supreme Court has said for a long time, a plaintiff has a right to choose his forum as long as there's jurisdiction and all these other things. And here you have the overwhelming weight of the convenience factors here in the United States. So that's what we'd ask Your Honors to do.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.